Trevino. Councilmember Villagran.
Here.
Councilmember Saldana will not be here. He is attending a Texas Parks and Wildlife meeting or hearing in Austin. Councilmember Sandoval.
Here.
Mayor, we do have a quorum, and the first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes from the City Council Governance Committee meeting of January 16th.
Okay, great. Thank you, everyone. Time is 11:39 a.m. Welcome to our City Council Governance Committee meeting. Item one, as you heard, approval of the City Council Governance Committee meeting minutes of January 16th. I entertain a motion for approval of those minutes.
Motion to approve.
There's a motion and a second for approval of the item number one, which is the minutes from January 16th. Any questions, clarifications? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Item two.
Item number two is a briefing and discussion regarding the proposed city manager performance measures for 2019. And this is to be presented by Ben Grizzell and Lori Stewart.
Good morning, Mayor and Council members. Wanted to introduce Linda Wisher from Siegel Waters. She's going to help with the presentation today. She and I will be doing a lot of piggybacking on this. The presentation will actually include items 2, 3, and 4. I don't know whether we can read those all at the beginning or how many.
Lori, why don't you go ahead and preface the entire conversation, and just for the benefit of those watching, my colleagues, this will be a pretty high-level overview. The next step in the process is that we will bring this in front of the full council, likely in our future executive session, to talk about the actual compensation analysis and so forth for full council discussion. So go ahead, Lori.
Thank you. Okay. As a reminder, the City Council did hire Siegel Waters Consulting last summer to create a consultant manage performance review process and also research appropriate compensation levels for the city manager, the city clerk, the city auditor, and the chief presiding judge, the four positions that are appointed officials to the mayor and city council. So on the 13th of November, Linda Wishart was here from Siegel to present some of the background on what we were doing with the performance management system, and she's here today to cover the final document on that and also the compensation report, and then I'll be adding some detail on what we've been doing with the metrics for this fiscal year 2019.
I'd like to bring Linda up at this time. Good morning. Certainly appreciate being in front of you again. Nice to see faces that I'm familiar with. As Lori has mentioned, certainly, I'm going to get to this first so we can go through a couple slides. I want to talk a little bit, again, just in brief, about the methodology used, first with regards to the performance management process. As you all are familiar with, we began with stakeholder interviews, getting your input, your thoughts, questions, concerns. Throughout that process, met several times with the mayor and project team with regards to recommendations for the type of performance evaluation that would be appropriate for these four positions. And then through that process, last meeting where we discussed in general the level of competencies and goals for the performance management system, as well as the rating scale and other details. We're not going to cover that again today, but certainly that is available for you in the final report that I believe you have in front of you as well. And we're going to talk a little bit about that final performance appraisal form and the recommendations specific to the city manager and city clerk position. I'm going to step aside while Lori sort of takes you through those two forms. Certainly can take questions if there are any in the process, but as moving forward, certainly the next step once those performance appraisals for fiscal year 19 are approved, we would be doing a similar process for fiscal year 19. Fiscal year 2020. Fiscal year 19 are the ones that Lori's going to review with you today, and then I'm going to speak a little bit more about the timeline for fiscal year 2020 from a performance perspective, as well as the results of the executive compensation study.
Thank you, Linda. For 2019, we had the format from the consultant, so you should have in your materials the draft 2019 performance evaluations for the city manager and also the city clerk. And you'll notice that they contain the same core values and competencies with a value of 40%. Our core values of teamwork, innovation, integrity, and professionalism, and then new competencies of service excellence, strategic planning, leadership, and goal orientation, obtaining results. So those would be common metrics for all four of the positions, but in your packets today, you've got for the city clerk and the city manager. Those would be in common. At this point, they're rated 5% each, equal weighting for a total of 40%. The other 60% then becomes specific performance measures for each position. So beginning with the city manager, what you would have in that section is 60% of the total, which could be weighted based on the importance of for ease of presentation. We've assigned an equal 10% value to each one of the metrics for the city manager. That will be discussed further among the full council. But as a starting point, we have financial stewardship, which would include general fund revenue and expenditure variance. Public safety, which includes collective bargaining issues, filling vacancies, leadership training, radio system metrics. Another key area, street maintenance and infrastructure, including street condition scores, sidewalks, and the bond program. Affordable housing is another key area to be evaluated, which includes adding housing units, owner-occupied rehab, the under-one-roof program, home buyer assistance programs, risk mitigation, fund policy and strategic planning. Other metrics would include succession planning for senior leadership. This is one of the areas that Siegel had identified from the interviews that were done with council members, and also the resident survey and the areas that are being improved from that survey, the allocation of priorities and resources from the information we gained in the survey. So that would be our recommendation for 19. And again, we came to that, HR staff put that together based on suggestions from the consultant and also going back to your goal setting last summer and what was ultimately in the budget and some of the metrics that are in our budget document for this fiscal year. So remember, we're talking about fiscal year 19, so we are talking about the fiscal year that we are about halfway through at this point. So we're focusing on things that have already been approved by council, are already priorities in our system, and have metrics to them now. For the city clerk, we did a similar process, but we spent a lot of time working with the incumbent. So we have input from Leticia Vasek on her goals, and she spent a lot of time putting this together. So key metrics such as what you've seen before, passport revenue, meeting support, customer satisfaction, financial disclosures, those types of key metrics that are reported quarterly. This year happening to be an election year, so there are election metrics, including applications, the ballot, campaign finance reports, the budget around the elections. Another main priority area would be planning and the swearing-in and inauguration ceremony. Another area, there are a number of IT improvements that the city clerk's office is working on, including electronic filing, imaging systems, board and commission applications, and your council voting system in the council chambers. So we'd be measuring the progress towards those initiatives. And then there's another initiatives category, such as publishing some finding tools that would aid our residents in finding certain things like ordinances, minutes, and contracts, an Archive Month celebration, and an RFP and contracting process for the preservation of historic records. And again, for the clerk, That was five areas, so at this point the suggested weighting is a 12% each for those. So again, the top part of the form is 40% for the standard metrics, the core values and the competencies, and then specific metrics being the other 60% that will be developed based on the priorities for each year. And what's in front of you today is for fiscal year 19, which ends at the end of September. And now I'll bring Linda back up to talk about going forward and how the process is.
I think it's important also as you're reviewing the fiscal year 19 performance appraisal form that you know these are just a collaboration between Siegel Water's recommendations as well as working with the project HR project team and the incumbents to finalize the metrics. Please know that this form is very flexible. It is developed such that as you continue to discuss areas with regards to certain goals or metrics, if you have other competencies or issues that you feel need to be better highlighted, certainly this form is flexible enough to incorporate those changes as well as any of the changes in weighting. However, certainly, we would recommend some guidelines with regards to that if you move forward. Currently, as Lori indicated, we're recommending 40% of the performance evaluation be represented by the core values and competencies, and 60% on the based on the special initiatives or metrics. I wanted to go ahead. Did somebody say? I'm sorry, I thought somebody had a question. I want to take just a minute and sort of walk you through the proposed timeline that you see in the presentation. Obviously, finalized pay decisions for fiscal year 2018 have already been approved and the actions executed. They were retroactive, of course, to January 1, 2019. In April of 2019, we're looking for you to approve those fiscal year 2019 sort of transition performance measures you have in front of you. And then the schedule sort of continues as it has in the past, in which during the budget and goal setting process for next year, that will be the opportunity to begin to also develop the special initiatives and goal objectives for fiscal year 2020 for these four appointed positions. Hopefully to have that draft by July of this year. And then in conjunction with the budget work, certainly finalize those executive goals and metrics by either late September, because obviously fiscal year begins October 1, and we would like to have the fiscal year 2020 metrics in place as the fiscal year begins. And then as the process continues, certainly in the month of December, the council would then be considering the results of the fiscal year 19 performance and determining any pay actions appropriately moving forward. To take you into the compensation study, since we have the performance evaluations in front of you for fiscal year 19, I think it's important to reiterate, again, the methodology. Siegel Waters proposed certain benchmark organizations as peer comparators, and that was based on various aspects of city size, budget, staff size, common variables that would be reflected in these other entities. We developed and distributed a customized survey to 10 peer cities, and we'll talk about those cities in a moment. And certainly we had some outside agencies that we felt were important as a consideration And so that information, that competitive data, was obtained by your Human Resources Department. On the next slide, you'll see the 10 peer employers that were used as comparators. Austin, Charlotte, North Carolina, Dallas, El Paso, Fort Worth, Houston. Houston is one of the only ones that are not council manager type of government, but we felt it was important to include Oklahoma City, Phoenix, San Jose, and Virginia Beach. Then Siegel provided three data points from published data, and then, as I indicated, the Human Resources Department provided additional follow-up data from organizations such as the Alamo Colleges District, Bexar County, Brooks, CPS Energy, SAWS, University Health System, UT San Antonio, Via Metropolitan Transit, and Valero Alamo Bowl. Those additional agencies were considered only for the city manager comparison purposes, but all the other three positions were compared to all the other peer employers noted here. Again, very briefly, in order to ensure that we are looking at apples to apples when we're using comparative data, it's best practices. All consultants use various types of adjustments to the data, and indeed, we utilized the Economic Research Institute adjustments for cost of labor, therefore adjusting the salaries reported by the various peers based on their relationship to the city of San Antonio. Once all that data was collected, we analyzed the data to identify the city's current market position for actual base pay. All of this information is indeed detailed in your final report that I believe you have a copy of. And then we provided specific information with regards to each appointed position and peer comparator supplemental pay and pay practices for your review. As we looked at the data, actual pay, and because the data was collected November 2018, because the data was collected November of 2018, and the data was reflected of fiscal year 2018, please know that these calculations were compared against the prior city manager, Cheryl Scully, and here are the actual results. If you review the actual average salary the city of San Antonio compared to those peer comparators, average salary and actual average salary, certainly we found that the city clerk is paid quite well within the range. When we talk about salary ranges and position or percentages of actual salary to the range, we're talking about the midpoint of the market data that this was compared to that was collected and analyzed. So as an example, any number between 95% and 105% we would consider as market competitive. Numbers above 105% are extremely competitive or perhaps lead the market. Those numbers below 100% or 95% would be seen as beneath the market. So as you can see, the current city clerk's pay is at 130% of average. City auditor, 109%. The city manager at the time was at 105%, so indeed was within that range of being paid at market. And the presiding judge of the municipal court, again, is just slightly above that market rate. This was very interesting information because we all come to the table making some assumptions, perhaps, with regards to where we believe pay is and or should be. But I think it's fair enough to say that you are being, that you are paying these appointed positions correctly and within the market. Every time I press next, I get first line.
I apologize.
So the next step, once we identify where, what position pay was within the marketplace, Siegel Waters developed two different options with regards to proposed salary ranges for the four positions. I'll talk about that in just a minute. There are some other findings that are outlined in the final report, but some of the recommendations include perhaps the council wanting to determine what the actual pay philosophy is of the city, whether that be willing, you know, paying at or above market, or some other position within the marketplace, identifying what that basic philosophy is for guidelines in the future. Again, we've made some recommendations with regards to future pay adjustments, and not only adjustments to actual salaries, but also to the structure itself. As we know, the market continues to move on a regular basis, so it's important that we continue to maintain those structures. Recommendations, again, made specific to appointed positions for various types of supplemental pay and pay practices, including things such as car allowance, cell phone allowance, expense allowance, other supplemental benefits, life insurance, things of that nature. All of that was is provided in your final report. So I want to spend just a little bit of time walking you through the proposed structure. Please understand that Siegel Waters is recommending you adopt a pay structure, although certainly at the determination of the council, if you prefer not to adopt a formal structure, these numbers are offered as guidelines as you go forward with regards to pay for these positions. So the 50th percentile, again, which is the median of the marketplace, this is where proficiency of the, this is considered proficiency of the job in the 50th percentile, which is your pay range midpoint. You can see that we recommended for the city clerk a pay range midpoint of approximately 113,322, city auditor, city presiding judge. And, of course, we have a footnote with regards to the city manager based on the new referendum that was passed based on the actual amount of the city manager's pay. Certainly, if we're looking at the city manager's current pay, we would find that his pay is below the market in compared to the data and the findings that we had based on the 2018 information. The second option is to use what we call the 75th percentile, which basically means based on the size and the complexity of the city of San Antonio, the seventh largest city in the country, we certainly want to recognize that and can do that based on developing a structure in which the ultimate midpoint, if you will, ends up to be at the 75th percentile of the market. So that means most of the salaries would be between the first, the 25th percentile and the 75th percentile of the market. So it allows for greater growth opportunities also at the top. The reason we propose a 60% pay range spread, and pay range spread means the distance from the minimum to the maximum of each pay range. This is historically a best practice for executive pay ranges, as well as the percent spread that is used for the other executives in the organization in their compensation structure. That's been, as the mayor indicated, a very high overview, and I'd be willing to take questions if appropriate at this time.
Great. Thank you very much, Linda, for the briefing. The next steps for the council is to take this up as a body to examine the recommendations and move forward on the processing of the evaluation tools for 2019. I'll just say on the issue of compensation, I'm glad that your assessment is that we're in range with the market. Obviously, we're constrained by the charter in one instance of the city manager's salary going forward, at least for now. But it would stand to reason that if San Antonio is going to be an employer of choice, that we should demonstrate excellence, and that we should probably be paying for that excellence in terms of being above market for the key appointed position. So I'm very comfortable with where the ball lies at this point. Look forward to the council discussion the next few weeks. Any questions? Councilwoman Villagran.
Thank you. Thank you, Linda, so much for your work. Thank you, Lori, and everyone a part of this. I know it's been a while coming, and I think this some of your recommendations, you talked about a pay philosophy. I think that's really good as we move forward to consider as a body here. Just one thing that I wanted to put out here right now that I would love to see with the performance measures, specifically with the city manager, is it's not here, but it's kind of buried in there with the infrastructure and street maintenance there. It talks about equity, but I think we need to have that as a performance measure overall, not just equity within street maintenance. So that's something I'll be bringing up to my colleagues as we move forward. Thank you.
Councilwoman Sandwell.
Thank you for your presentation. Thank you, Lori, for the briefing and all of your work on this. A few questions. I thought about the structure that you presented, where it's 40%. So going back to the evaluation, where it's 40% these core values and 60% specific initiatives. And I'm going to take some time to read the core values because they definitely apply to our employees, but I think the description for them might be a little bit different when we're talking about our top executives that are very, very outwardly facing. So I know you guys are both wondering, who is she going to ask? I don't know. So when I bring on staff or when I start working with someone, they report to me, I sort of see their job as kind of trifold. One is, what are their ongoing duties, right, that they do every year? Make sure that the garbage gets picked up, that the trains run on time. And then every year we have these budget initiatives, specific goals that we want to get done. And then, of course, there are the qualities, right, that not just what they do, but how they do it. So what I don't see in the proposed framework is giving the staff credit, the appointees credit, for making sure they carry that ball of doing the work that just needs to be done day in and day out. And I think that's important. That's an important piece. So can you talk to me about your philosophy regarding not including that?
Again, when we look at compensation data and we look at the marketplace for similarly placed positions with similar characteristics and job duties, we're matching the basic job descriptions accordingly. So as you're looking at pay, certainly the market midpoint is reflective of someone being proficient within the context of that certain position, whichever position it is. So they are, in essence, given credit for the regular job duties, because again, that, pardon?
Yeah, it's more so the evaluation portion of it. But you bring up a really good point, and I've written this down earlier, is I don't see how the evaluation instrument ties to the job description. And we don't have a job description. We put something out when we were recruiting for this position, but I would like to see those linked. And again, in my, 10 years of government work, that's what we do, and we evaluate you on how that matches to the job description.
And I appreciate that, and those job descriptions were drafted and provided for review and or edit as required. Lori, do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, yes, job descriptions were part of their scope, so we do have that.
Do we have that?
Share that. No, that's not in the packet right now, but we can certainly share that. The other three positions, the auditor, the clerk, the chief presiding judge, have been given those job descriptions for their review and comment. So that's part of the ongoing process that we're working on now. And I would just want to add to your question, Councilman. I think some of the day-to-day is reflected in the, like, especially in the city clerk, her regular metrics that she's reporting every quarter reflects some of that regular work as well. But that can continue to be refined, certainly.
Okay, so sorry, when do I get to see the job descriptions?
Yeah, we can send that out.
Yeah, so after this meeting, my office is going to send out a memo to the full council about all the data and collection, and we'll include the current job description in that packet.
Okay, I just want to make sure we have time to synthesize that and then reconcile that with the evaluation. I don't feel prepared to do that today.
So absolutely, this is just an overall high-level briefing. The next discussion will be full council. We'll have some time and attention on the specifics of the survey and the tool.
All right, thank you. And then just another high-level question. This has more to do with the salary evaluation. And again, we just got this, so have not had a chance to look at it. Hope to do so. But in terms of the comparisons with other cities, we know, like you mentioned, San Antonio is a little bit more complicated in that it's the seventh largest city. We have municipal utilities, yet they're kind of independently governed. So how are those nuances considered in the salary survey? And say for our clerk, she has some different functions that maybe other clerks don't have.
Right. And again, we look at those distinguishing characteristics as we propose pay ranges, which is one reason why this second option is provided, to accommodate the fact that you do have more complex jobs, that you are larger than most of the entities that we survey to a certain extent, and certainly we want to account for that.
And is that information, I appreciate that. I think that's very helpful. But as we make that decision, is that information gathered in the report that you did? Or would I have to go back and look up, some of the cities that you left listed to figure that out? Or is that information, do you have that information?
I hope I'm responding to your question. If not, please redirect. Certainly, we send out a survey draft with a job summary of each position that we're asking the peers to match to and provide us their salary data. So we get that information directly from the peer. Certainly we can, if there are questions or concerns with regards to, no, we probably don't have an apples-to-apples job description between all of those 10 peers and San Antonio, we certainly can ask them for their job descriptions. We do find a lot of times that other cities do not have formal job descriptions for those positions as well. So that is somewhat problematic, but which is why we take into account those nuances when we're looking at proposing salary structures.
Okay, so here's my concern about that. So we don't have that information with us right now, and we're proposing a range, but we know where we land when we look at the compensation in terms of their range, 105. That's extremely helpful. We don't know where we land when it comes to the duties. So I think it's just hard to match those.
And I can appreciate your question. I think certainly that was not part of the scope, is to ensure that we had identified the specific duties for each of the other entities. But certainly we can provide you with whatever information that we have available or that the peers can provide if they have job descriptions.
Yeah, and I apologize for that. I think it comes down to when we're actually going to make the decision that you start realizing, oh, wait, I need a little bit more information. It's hard to determine that way up front. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councilor Sandoval. Okay, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Go now to item number five
is a briefing and discussion of a council consideration request from Councilmember Courage on a general homestead exemption and increase to the existing over 65 and disabled tax exemption. This is to be presented by Van Gorsel.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council members. As the clerk said, this item is in response to a CCR, co-sponsored by Councilman Courage and Councilman Perry, to look at researching a general homestead property tax exemption, as well as increasing our over 65 and disabled property tax exemptions. I'm going to go through just some statistics and information about a homestead exemption and what we currently have in place today. So in terms of our overall property tax roll, our total assessed valuation for this year is $132.6 billion. We have exemptions totaling almost $18 billion, and our total taxable valuation is just under $115 billion. And you can see on that slide broken down between residential, commercial, multifamily, and other. In terms of some property tax statistics, we have just under 473,000 parcels on the property tax roll. Of that, we have about 236,000 homesteads. We do offer, at a local option, we offer over 65. When you reach age 65, we give you a $65,000 exemption. So you take your property tax bill or your property tax value. It's adjusted to make $65,000 of that exempt. And then you pay the taxes on the remaining portion. We also have in place a property tax freeze. So when you turn age 65, after we make that adjustment for that $65,000 value being exempt, the taxes are frozen, meaning they don't go up at all in terms of dollar value. They're frozen at that dollar value. We also have a local option disabled persons exemption. We have just about 8,800 of those in place. And then we have some statutory exemptions that we're not allowed to change. They are set by statute, and these are for our disabled veterans. We've got about 24,000 disabled veterans that are receiving some form of tax exemption there. In terms of our homesteads, I mentioned just under 237,000 homesteads. This table breaks that down by years in the home, and you can see that overall, we have about 44% of our homesteads have reached age 65, meaning that their property taxes are frozen and don't increase from year to year. If you look at it in terms of those that have been in their home for over 30 years, 94% of those that have been in their homestead for over 30 years are frozen. And you can see the breakdown for the other categories there. So I'm going to go through the next couple of slides kind of quickly here. If you look at those homes where the individual's been in the home for greater than 20 years, there's 65,000 of those. 82% of those have reached age 65 and have obviously gotten the tax exemption plus the tax freeze. And in addition to that, we've got, on the next slide, those that have been in their homes 20 years or less, we've got 171,500 of those. 30% of those homes have reached age 65 and have reached the tax freeze. In terms of a homestead exemption, if we were to do one, here's just some of the components that come out of state law. A homestead applies to all homesteads regardless of value. We've been asked in the past, can you set it based on a certain threshold or a certain home value? We cannot. If you implement a homestead, it applies to all homesteads. We also looked at the option, I mentioned we've got a tax freeze in place. Many cities don't. So we've got about 44% of our homesteads frozen. Could we have either or option, meaning that if you've got the tax freeze, you don't get the homestead exemption. You only get the homestead exemption if you haven't hit the tax freeze. The state law doesn't provide that option. Again, we go in across the board. It cannot be adopted as a dollar amount, only as a percentage. There is a minimum amount that you have to do. You can go up to 20% of the appraised value, and it can't be less than $5,000. I mentioned you can't do a fixed dollar amount. The way you would do that is you would set the percentage so low that you get a minimum of $5,000 for all homesteads. Some cities have done that. In order to be effective for FY 2020, you would have to adopt this by July 1st of this 2019, of this summer. This next slide just kind of breaks down for you some homestead values going from $100,000 to $500,000 on the far left. Our average homestead this year is $178,929. It tells you what their total tax bill is, what portion of their tax bill is related to the city, and then we've given you several different options there going to the right in terms of what the savings would be under different homestead options. I mentioned, you know, if you set something like a tenth of a percent homestead exemption, you would hit this first column. It would be the minimum $5,000. Everybody would basically see around a $28 savings on their annual tax bill. If you go to the far, as you go to the right, you have 5%, a 10%, a 20% exemption. And you can see the dollar values ranging there in terms of savings. And then on the bottom, we've given you what we believe yesterday impact would be to the city for foregone revenue for the homestead exemption, the component going, of course, to the general fund and then to our debt service fund. Debt service fund is there to support the bonds that we issue. The impact there would be larger in terms of capacity because $2.3 million could then utilize the issue debt. That would be a much larger impact on our capital program. I do want to note that the slide up here says preliminary based on homestead tax exemption only. We shared some of this information with you before. We got the approach from the appraisal district in terms of how we would value this. What we want to do, and this is only looking at the impact of the homestead exemption. I've talked about the truth in taxation calculations can be a little bit complicated. There's several steps to them. We want to run some of this analysis through that full truth in taxation model because in some cases, as I mentioned, even if your property taxes are frozen because you've hit the senior freeze, you're still going to get the homestead exemption. It's going to lower your payment. Your tax dollar ceiling will still stay in place, and over time, it'll grow back to that dollar tax ceiling. So some of it gets offset in the first year, and that's part of what we want to look at. So by the time we come back, we'll have better information on that. I know that's kind of hard to explain that. We'll try to come up with some examples to show you how that impact is impacting some of our other exemptions. This slide is a comparison to some of the other cities here in Texas, major Texas cities. You saw the slide before. There's two columns that we don't have here. We showed you taxable value before, and then we gave you foregone revenue loss due to exemptions. We weren't able to get all of that data updated from the other cities. We will have that the next time we talk about homestead exemption. We're working on getting that. But I wanted to include this and a couple of things for you to consider as we talk about, you know, putting a policy decision for you all in terms of whether we do this or not, is when you look at us and you compare us to other cities, yes, our over 65 exemption is lower than, let's say, Houston, Austin, and Dallas, but you'll note none of them have a tax freeze. So what does that mean? That means that all the properties within those cities continue to go up year over year as values increase. Or they can go down if values decrease, obviously. But if they're increasing, they're all going up collectively. In our case, because we have the tax freeze in place, 44% of the homesteads in San Antonio, that dollar value is fixed. They're not going to increase regardless of what the market value of the home is doing. So there's a little bit of a difference there in terms of how that works. And then you'll note that on the single exemption, it's the same thing. Those are also frozen in our case. In the other city's case, they're not. So again, those would be increasing as you go out into the future as well. We'll come back with additional information on these components as well. In terms of some of the other entities in Bexar County that offer the over 65 and disabled persons tax freeze, Bexar County does, Alamo Colleges does, and then all the school districts have a mandatory tax freeze at age 65 as well. In terms of what we offer today, the city does offer that $65,000 exemption once you turn age 65. We offer a $12,500 disabled persons tax exemption. If you basically are 100% disabled, as determined by the Social Security Administration, you would get this $12,500 tax exemption. And then I think, again, the key point with both of these exemptions is it's frozen. So once you get the exemption and you've met this threshold, the dollars are set. Regardless of what the market value of the home does, the dollar property taxes don't increase. For this fiscal year, we will forego nearly $52 million in property tax revenue from these exemptions and from the tax freeze. Just some things to consider as well is, I had on the agenda slide, state legislative issues, probably be more state legislative challenges at this point, at least from a financial standpoint. Senate Bill 2 and House Bill 2 have been filed, which both propose to lower the property tax rollback from 8% to 2.5%. That is a significant impact on us going forward financially. It would have a significant impact on our ability to deliver, we believe, critical services going forward. Those bills wouldn't be anticipated to take effect until 2021. The Senate version has come out of committee, has not been voted on the Senate floor. The House version is still in committee, has been heard, but has not come out of the House committee at this point. There are some other bills we're watching as well. There's Senate Bill, I think it's 1152. Yeah. It deals with compensation from telecommunications providers and from cable companies for use of the public right-of-way. It changes that compensation formula. It would be effective, based on the way the bill is drafted, for FY 2020. We've estimated that impact of that bill, if it passes, at $8 million, and that comes right out of the general fund. So another potential $8 million impact in there. In terms of the rollback rate reduction, you've seen this before. If we went back and applied that 2.5% rollback rate for the past 10 years, we would have lost cumulatively $304 million in revenue. The general fund would be $82 million less this fiscal year than it currently is, and the average annual savings to the average homestead over that time frame would have been about $45 annually. That equates to about $3.77 monthly on average. So our recommendation at this point is we'll continue to do research on this. We'll continue to analyze the impact on our budget and our finances going forward. We do intend on providing an update as part of the five-year forecast in B session on April 17th. I don't know, based on where it'll depend on what happens legislatively. We may still not know what the impact of a potential rollback rate reduction is. Or I mentioned the telecommunications bill impact that could happen in 2020. We may not know all of that, but we'll certainly provide updated information to you during that B session of the five-year forecast. So with that, Mayor, concludes my presentation, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Ben. And this is presentation based on the CCR filed by Councilman Perry and Councilman Curry's Laurel and Hardy over there. So I'd like to give them an opportunity to say a few words.
I resemble that remark. Thank you. I want to commend Ben for the presentation he made. I think that he highlighted a lot of the important things that we've been talking about. Also, he highlighted some things that I think are extraneous to what we're actually talking about, which is property values. Our goal is to have that research completed. You had mentioned other things that we need to look at, various things that may be happening. One of those is the actual maybe state mandate lowering the taxable values or taxable income to us. Well, this kind of fits right into that, because if we provide a homestead exemption, that will lower some of the taxes that come into the city. So if they reduce us from 8 to 7 to 6 to 5, this really is part of solving that puzzle to a certain extent. I think that there's a lot for us to consider in the information he's given, including the fact that there are still tens of thousands of families that don't fall within the freeze because they're over 65. Also, many thousands of those families every year sell their property. And so a new owner, if they're under 65, they start paying the taxes. So those exemptions disappear. You can also say that there are people who are 64 this year who will be turning 65, and yes, they'll start getting that exemption. I think all of those things need to be forecasted into the future. We're not, at least I'm not, recommending that next year we cut 20% of our taxable income by going all the way. But I think having a reasonable and responsible plan on how we can move over a period of time to allow everyone who's a homeowner to get a benefit similar to the benefit we give to senior citizens while not crippling the city. Last year, our city income and expenditures increased substantially. We weren't sure what that increase may have been at the time we were talking about offering a homestead exemption at the time. We were a little unsure and maybe not willing to make that kind of commitment. Had we made it, it would have had not a significant impact on the increase in money that we had, and it might have meant we didn't do a couple of things we did do. But certainly, it could have been done. And we contend it can be done in the future through a gradual process. But there are things to consider, what the state's going to mandate, even what the federal government may be doing, because we rely on $25 million of federal money every year to help support some of the projects that we know the community wants. Those are my concerns, my remarks. I'm sure my friend Councilman Curry has more.
No, thank you, Councilman Courage. And Ben, thank you very much for that information up there. It's a lot to take in at this point in time. A lot of this we saw last year. And I agree with Councilman Courage. If we had the courage to take that step forward at that point in time, we could have afforded that at least that 5% homestead exemption for 2019. We compare ourselves to other cities, we benchmark ourselves to other cities, and we got a slide that benchmarks against other cities here. I think it goes to the fact that we need to dig deep and take a look at what we're doing here in San Antonio to help those people that are below the age of 65, that we have thousands, as he was saying, that are struggling on a year-to-year basis. Because it's not just the property values going up, and I've said this over and over again. We have other fees and other rates that continue to climb. And they're having to make those payments as well. Not only the property values going up, but all of those other rates and fees that are going up. And this exemption would help offset some of those rising rates and fees. So it's not just strictly about property taxes. Yes, that is the bulk of it. And we can get into all the other things about it being meaningful. Well, let me tell you, that chart that showed the different percentages on an average home, that is meaningful to a lot of people here in San Antonio. School taxes, that's another whole issue. That's being worked at the state level, at the legislature. Let's let them do their job. Let's do our job here in San Antonio to help our homeowners with starting a homestead exemption. As Councilman Courage said, we don't have to start at 20%, but let's start one. Let's start somewhere and start offering that back to our homeowners who are struggling out there to make ends meet and stay in their houses. So this started, if y'all remember, I tried to get this going 2 years ago. This was not a political ploy to get this going 2 years ago. I tried it again last year, and this year I thank my colleagues for joining me on this CCR to get it into the system so that we could do that research, know what the impacts are, and I'm being a little bit more aggressive to take that step necessary to provide that homestead exemption and not study it forever. So, anyway, thank you, sir. Thank you for that opportunity.
Thank you, Councilman. All right. Thank you very much for the presentation, Ben. I do have some questions. I'll start with just making sure that everybody knows the intent here is that we want to move forward with eyes wide open as we enter our budget process, and certainly San Antonio is no different than any other city in the country in wanting to provide some tax relief for its citizens, and that's why we're working very hard with the legislature at the moment. With regard to benchmarking, though, I think it would be very helpful, and I don't know if this is possible, but could we get an apples-to-apples comparison from with our peer cities about the total tax relief and tax burden to the average homeowner in San Antonio versus in Austin or Dallas or Houston or any other city based on the mix of exemptions that are offered locally?
That is something we're working on, Mayor, to try to get additional information so that we can give you, I mentioned we forego about $52 million in revenue this year. We want to give those some comparable numbers from the other cities, but also to try to provide additional information about how it impacts homeowners. I mentioned the senior freeze versus homestead and really being able to lay out some of that information as well.
Okay, yeah.
Mayor, are you asking about the total tax bill? Are there other
it's really
taxing entities that are just those other cities? Is that what you're asking
about? Well, it's about total tax burden. So, I mean, we're having a discussion about housing cost burden on people and how that is different from one city to the next based on the level of wages in the city, but also level of property value. It would be helpful to see what our housing burden, average housing burden, and what amount of that is actually coming from the tax bill is versus other cities.
Okay, Mayor, I misunderstood your question. Let me go back and look at that. I'm not sure that's something. We'll see what we can do on it.
Because I suspect, and you caught my ear, and I wanted to ask you if I heard you correctly, that some of the exemptions that are offered here in San Antonio are being undervalued in the discussion, particularly the senior exemption. Did you say that 44% of all households in San Antonio are receiving the senior freeze?
44% of all homesteads in San Antonio are at the senior freeze.
Okay. Okay. And that means that 44% of homesteads declared essentially have a 0% tax cap.
That's correct. It's not even a percentage, it's a dollar cap. So when you reach whatever your tax bill is when you turn 65, whatever that dollar value is for the city tax, it does not go off.
Right, so it's not subject to a rollback election or anything else.
Yes,
in fact, there's no choice but to keep it at zero, flat line on growth. And we know what, this is one of the things that I think we have to consider and look at in the analysis as we get more information before April 17th. I guess that's all my questions for now. I just I appreciate the thoughtful dialogue here and the willingness to do something for our homeowners. I think it's a mix of a lot of things that we've got to be cognizant of as we move forward, but we certainly don't want to give short shrift to the concern. So looking forward to the April 17th meeting. It would be our intent then to have enough information if and when to take action before the budget cycle that we'll do that before July 1.
Yes, we certainly want to give you an update as part of the forecast presentation so that you get a full picture of kind of what we're seeing. Again, some of it may still be moving from a legislative perspective, so we may not know exactly what 2020 might look like, but I think we'll have a much better picture for you on the 17th of where we're at. I mentioned refining the impact of this. The number that I think we gave you here is probably on the upper end. I mean, maybe it comes down a little bit in terms of the impact of homesteads. So we're going to go through all of that, give you the best information we have on the 17th.
Okay. And just to get a sense of scale here, I know we talked a lot about the city's portion of the homeowner's tax bill is one-fifth, 20%. The bulk of it's coming from school finance, which is school district tax, which is about 50%. SARA, UHS, Bexar County. What is our total M&O tax revenue collection annually? What is the total amount of tax revenue M&O rate that the city receives annually?
This year, $365 million.
$365 million of property tax revenue to essentially deliver services, and of course that's one element of the mix of revenues we have. What is our total public safety budget annually?
For this year, for 19, I want to say police, fire, the whole public safety, I think, is around $894 million.
So our public safety budget is $800 million annually, and our total property tax revenue collection is $365 million.
Roughly.
Okay. I say that because I kind of know the answer, but what I'm trying to illustrate is that, you know, this notion of getting back to basics is one that we fully embrace because we wouldn't be able to make our budget work otherwise. But the truth of the matter is the other elements of the burden, CPS, SAWS, both of those being publicly owned utilities that in which the revenue is in part going to pay for their own infrastructure but also coming to the city's general fund, those revenue sources are paying for police officers and firefighters in addition to drainage improvements, street maintenance, and so on and so forth. And I think that being aware of that and being honest about that and being transparent about that with our residents is required because we want to make sure that we are going into this eyes wide open. Everyone knows we are going to do our very best at the state level and the local level to provide property tax relief, but doing so carelessly without the proper data and analysis would be to essentially fail on our obligations to deliver the basic services that the city is required to deliver for its citizens. Thank you very much for your presentation, Ben. Any other questions? Councilman Sam. Oh, I'm sorry, Councilman Trujillo.
Thank you. One thing we've left out in the analysis is we talk about 40% of those homes that are on this kind of 65 exemption, but I think something we need to put out there, and we're studying right now, is how many people who are qualified for the exemption are actually taking advantage of that. This is information that Appraisal Districts put out. I think it's something close to like 60% of those that actually qualify for the over 65 exemption are actually applying for this. The whole impetus for the data sharing CCR that we just agreed last week, which we hope helps to sort of create better lines of communication between the folks that can use these exemptions and qualify for these programs. So are you talking with the Appraisal District about that gap?
In terms of being able to fill that gap, yes, I believe there's ongoing conversations between us, our IT department, and the Bear Appraisal District on that.
So I think as part of your study, please consider the fact that data sharing is new, but could really mean closing that gap. There's information that SAWS and CPS and other entities can help to provide Appraisal District to help close that gap in a meaningful way. And when I think about and when we're saying 40% of those that take the homestead, we're not seeing the entire picture. The real picture is those who are not taking advantage of the 65 and actually qualifying. And so I think we need to get that straight and level first. There's also an issue with homestead itself. And so I know that the Appraisal District of Leinberger is doing an audit right now, the homestead exemption. And I think we need to follow that because their finding is there's a lot of folks who are taking the homestead and not qualified, but vice versa. We want to make sure that we get those that are qualified. So for us to get that, as you point out, use the data, get the right numbers, I think we need to understand who is taking advantage of what and are we there? Because as we're trying to adjust these numbers, and we definitely have a significant number of people are not taking the exemptions that they have the right to take. And I think that could skew a lot of our data, our numbers. Do you agree?
We'll definitely follow up on that as well.
Okay. So I want to make sure. Hey, we've got a good line of communication with the Appraisal District. We've got the data sharing, and as we're laying this out in terms of the impact to the city, I think we need to make sure that the first thing is making sure that the people that do qualify are already taking. Significant number of people that are not taking advantage of aren't aware that they can't utilize the system.
Okay. follow up with the prison district on that as well.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you, Councilman Trevino, Councilman Sandoval.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Ben, for the presentation. Thank you, Councilman, for being here today and speaking to your CCR. I actually think it's good that you brought it forward and that we do have a robust discussion about it. The past couple of times when we brought it up, I think we were, at least I was, oh no, it's just going to reduce revenues. We've still got sidewalks to build, but I think it is absolutely worth a full-blown discussion. And I am looking forward to seeing you continue the analysis and how we have that. I think what you were referring to was that we might have an overlap between the people who are disabled and the ones who would get the home exemption, or the folks that are in the senior freeze and then would get the home exemption. So we don't really know what the cost is yet until we've got that, right?
That's correct. We want to try to go back and refine that more to make sure that we're accounting for shifts that may happen between those exemptions because of the homestead.
Okay, I think that would be very, very helpful for us to better understand the proposal. And the benchmarking that the mayor referred to, I think, is also very helpful. I was looking at the table where we're compared to other cities, and I guess I'd forgotten that, except for Austin, we have the lowest tax rate of the cities here. So, you know, looking at the cumulative tax burden is also helpful. I do have just a question for you. In terms of the over 65 exemption and even the disabled exemption, how long ago were those dollar values set?
Well, I have to get that back to you. You know? They were both adjusted in 2005. So 2005 was the last time we adjusted them. That's also the year we implemented the senior tax freeze.
Okay, and you picked 65, or someone picked 65,000 because it was a 65 and over tax freeze, is that how?
I'm not sure how they got 65,000, but yeah, it hasn't been adjusted, but to think about it from somebody's standpoint, if in 2005 they got this exemption, the taxes would have been frozen at that point and haven't changed since.
Right, so I think that may be worthy of revisiting as well. Our market was very, very different in 2005. So one of the conundrums of as we move forward with this, and I'll talk to my colleagues about it as well, maybe after the meeting, is that when you look at the different levels of, and you highlighted this in your table, depending on the value of the home, whether it's worth $100,000 or $500,000. You know, the savings is different and the cost to the city is different. And when we're talking about, you know, relief to people, it seems to me that the people who might really need the relief are in the homes further up, you know, in the $100,000 to $200,000 range. I mean, that's a little bit of a generalization, but I would say if you're in a $500,000 home in San Antonio, maybe the need for relief is a little bit different than in the lower valleys. I think that's just something that we have to contend with, right? That we don't have a scalpel to do this, to do a homestead exemption. So it comes with the territory, so we just have to be conscious of that. And then the other thing that's hard not to consider is we definitely want to help our homeowners that are having a hard time making ends meet, but we know that it's actually our renters that are having an even harder time making ends meet, that their home costs, that more of them are burdened or overburdened with the cost of housing than our homeowners. So it's just something to consider as we go forward, is how do we help our renters as well? And, you know, I think there's a generalization that maybe renters aren't going to be here for long in San Antonio, but I'm not sure that's entirely the case. I mean, there are people who have lived here for generations and whose families have lived here for generations, and they've never managed to own a home. So I think there are other barriers to home ownership, and home ownership isn't for everyone. There's a lot involved in maintaining your home. So anyway, those are my comments. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councilman Sandoval. Councilman DeGrom.
Hi, Ben. Thank you to my council colleagues for the CCR, and I'm glad I signed on to it so we could have this conversation here and not just
you know, a week or 2 weeks before budget, that we have it ingrained in our conversation as we look at budget. So in slide number 10, you talked about, so let's do the comparison of Fort Worth, because Fort Worth has the senior tax freeze, the disabled exemption of 40, over 65 exemption of 40, their local kind of homestead at 20%, and yes, the rate is at 0.785. So what is, in comparison with Fort Worth, I mean, what is the difference there? What is their general, what is their budget that they're looking at there?
Fort Worth, I'd have to go back to the council, but I don't know how this is.
So I think that's maybe one of the cities that we need to take a look at and see what is happening there. And I do think let's look at that, as Councilman Sandoval mentioned, the exemptions or the adjustments for that $65,000 or the $12,500, what would that look like? Is there ways to look creatively at different things if to see as we move forward, and what kind of impact would that make? The reason why I wanted to sign on and one, and the mayor mentioned it and others, it's like it's getting to a point where it is at any, we need some sort of tax relief. We need some sort of relief for our property owners and our homeowners. So that is why I'm hoping the data that we're getting from the Bexar County Appraisal District will be helpful. This research will be helpful, because we have to do something as a city, something else creatively as we move forward. So, thank you.
And we are actively, you know, Jeff is here. We're, as the legislature continues to look at these issues, we continue to try to ask for options for additional relief. You know, some of the challenges are, like, looking at the over 65 and disabled exemption. I mentioned that those have been in place. They're frozen. There's really not a way to, like, target tax reliefs. You could say those are locked in, they're already frozen. Maybe for new people going forward, you want to have a higher amount. The way the laws are written, unfortunately, every time we change something, it changes everybody. And so you're kind of maybe targeting relief, maybe where there doesn't need to be relief because it's already there. But it's difficult because of the options that we have. We'll lay all that out as part of the presentation on 17 in terms of some options.
Jeff, where is Representative Bernal's bill on the legacy?
Yeah, anchor neighborhood bill.
Neighborhoods.
Just for the group, that's a bill that would allow targeted relief based on how long someone has been in a home and how much the value has gone up around them. Hasn't been. They've both been filed. Senator Menendez and Representative Bernal filed those bills. They haven't been heard yet.
Where would they be going? Do we know?
I'll have to check.
I think probably
Ways and Means.
So that's where I would like to see us. I know we have it here later, but Mayor, I think I would like to see us do. Who do we need to talk to? What do we need to do in order to make sure that we get some sort of committee hearing? And of course, I think if this does go to a committee, San Antonio will probably be front center there to be as a witness.
Sure. We can talk about that in IGR, and I'll talk to the members themselves about how we can be of help.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman DeGran. Thanks very much, Ben. We'll look forward to the next round of analysis.
Thank you.
All right, item number 6.
Last item today is a briefing and discussion of a council consideration request from Councilmember John Courage on a request to create a neighborhood improvements fund, affordable housing fund. And this will be presented by Veto.
Yes. Good afternoon, Veronica Soto with the Neighborhood and Housing Services Department. No formal presentation. I'll just talk to you. So thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor and members of the Governance Committee. This CCR was filed in November by Councilmember Courage, who submitted the City Council consideration request requesting that we create a neighborhood improvement fund, tax increment, affordable housing fund. Specifically, the CCR says that any tax increment from a completed affordable housing project that utilizes housing grants funding would be directed to a dedicated fund to help with affordable housing. in a conversation with Councilman Crunch preparing to come before you, it was determined that the intent was to have a property tax increment that would go beyond the housing bond program, include other affordable housing incentive programs offered by the city as well. So this is in line with what is already part of the housing policy framework. There's a call for a dedicated revenue source or a fund for affordable housing. It's also included in our three-year business plan. I do want to talk about the housing bond since that's the language there. Our housing bond program does not anticipate that there will be yielding tax increment on large-scale multifamily developments. The reason for this is that we have partnerships with entities like the San Antonio Housing Trust that do offer 100% tax exemption. That is a gap financing tool. So one of our housing bond projects was approved by council. That's the 3880 Parkdale project. It's a multifamily rental complex. Total development cost is $40 million, but the property is anticipated to be 100% tax exempt. If it was not tax exempt, the Parkdale project would generate approximately $140,000 annually in tax increment. And so over a 30-year period, which is the affordability period, it would generate approximately $3.75 million. However, it is anticipated to be tax exempt, so there will be no tax increment generated. For the pending Eastside single-family infill sites, we have 5 lots under consideration to be developed as single-family homes for home ownership. If we assumed an appraised value of the homes at approximately $130,000 each, the property tax revenue generated would be approximately $2,250 annually. Over a 30-year term, it could generate about $65,000 over that 30-year period. Now, there's already a dedicated funding stream. The recently adopted or updated CCHIP program by City Council that is going to address affordable housing specifically designates an amount equal to 25% of the ad valorem tax increment paid by the developer of a completed CCHIP incentivized project to that fund. And that fund is to support affordable housing, and that fund is going to be managed by the Neighborhood and Housing Services Department. So, Mayor, with that analysis, we do recommend moving forward with the continued evaluation and analysis of the various incentive programs in line with the housing policy framework. It's part of what we're doing, and we recommend that this move forward to the Comprehensive Plan Committee, and we can present an update to them by about May or June on that item. That concludes my remarks. Thank you
very much, Beto. Councilman Courage is still here. Councilman, if you'd like to take your words on the CCR.
Thank you. And thank you, fellow council members, for hearing this. Our initial goal was to try and capture any tax increment that might come out of the bond money that we approved for $20 million. And it's apparent that there may be small amounts that we actually capture from that because there's an effort to make as many of these future projects as possible tax exempt. You know, maybe we didn't anticipate there would be such a large number of these being tax exempt. I think we thought about a lot of these becoming private developments, but be that as it may, we've also talked about the fact of looking that creating a fund for affordable housing and looking for other opportunities within the housing development process that may bring additional sources. The goal is to develop a stronger affordable housing source of revenue. We know HTC provides a certain amount of that, but we're looking for other opportunities. And I think this was a vehicle that we hoped we could use. And you know, in talking with Beto and her department, they are going to be looking for other possible avenues that may be able to provide additional revenue streams, be that small, gradually. But, you know, if we brought in 1,000 this year and 5,000 next year and, you know, who knows, 10,000 a year down the line, eventually we're going to be creating additional resources that we can devote to affordable housing. Could be bigger amounts sooner. It may take a longer period of time. But I remember 20 years ago or longer, 30 years ago, we set aside $10 million to work on developing houses in the city. That $10 million is still there today. But it hasn't really grown as maybe many of us thought it might over a 20, 30-year period to be a $40, $50 million fund to use for affordable housing. Maybe this can be one of those resources that does grow with the additional sources that may be out there that we could look for. And so that's the goal of bringing this forward. And we would hope that it's something we can look at when we get to budget time. I know one of the thoughts is that money that's collected may go into the general fund. My concern is that a lot of time council finds other priorities along the way, and general fund doesn't get allocated the way maybe we originally anticipated. So I would hope that this fund would become more along the lines of an enterprise fund, so that when that money becomes accumulated and dedicated, it remains strictly for affordable housing and doesn't get used for other purposes. So I think that's all the kind of development we'd like to see looked at in this process. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you very much, Councilman Courage. I think you said it well. This is a step in the right direction. It's a small step, but it's an incredibly important step, which is a paradigm change for the city of San Antonio, not ever having really a dedicated source of revenue for the purposes of affordable housing, housing that people can afford. So I applaud, and it's very gratifying, actually, to hear many council members taking it as part of their personal policy mission to advance the goals of the Mayor's Housing Policy Task Force report. There's a lot of people that are depending on the implementation of the report, and the last few days have been a very positive development, I think, for the future of our city. So thank you very much, Councilman Courage. Any questions from my colleagues? All right, the requested action was to advance this to the Comprehensive Planning Committee, so I'll entertain a motion to that effect.
So moved.
Okay. All right, there's a motion and a second to advance item number 6 to the CPC. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you all very much. Notice a tight agenda. We are adjourned.